again. Or if you just joined the group here at Monitor, forget thee again. My name's Henry Morgan. When Prince Philip was over here, us royalty sticks together. When the prince was here, he spoke at length about leisure time. I have no problem whatever, he said, in filling my leisure time. And I worry not at all whether what I do is good or wise or likely to improve my character or likely to help me become a whole man, whatever that may be. I like him. I like the way he talks. Well, I'll tell you something. Angie Dickinson is every bit a whole woman. And her idea of her enjoying her leisure, is not... I'm talking like half a man. Why is that? Anyway, Angie's our guest here in about 15 minutes, and so is Hans Conried in roughly 3 minutes. Brasilia by Herb Alpert's Tijuana Brass. Far be it from me to tell you what to do, but I'll tell you what not to do. Don't mother your mother on Mother's Day. Give her a little excitement. Give her Chanel No. 5. So I remember Hans Conried doing a radio show once in which he used 18 voices in 25 minutes. His command of such dialects as Spanish, Greek, Yiddish, French, Italian, Japanese, German. Of course, those make him ideal in character roles, but to me, Hans is simply a very funny guy. He's highly appreciated at parties and bar mitzvahs and ladies' luncheons and so forth. I guess he doesn't shrink from any engagement. He's currently in Chicago, and Hans spoke with Monitor reporter Jack Eigen.
What about after-dinner talks? Do you do that too, Hans?
Well, it's all dependent upon the company in which I find myself, Jack. Mm-hmm. You know, if the port's been passed out and the cigars and the ladies have retired, naturally conversation is free.
I was told that Hans Conried will talk about anything, anything at all, any subject, any time, any
not
place.
Not with any great clarity or sobriety, you understand, but I have a big mouth, it sometimes stands me in good stead because... Part of my work, my living, is earned by being a professional wise guy, Jack. You know that, and panel shows and the like.
I understand that even though you tour with a show and Hans Conried is in the national company, starring in the national company of Absence of a Cello, but they tell me that sometimes right after a show you'll take off for some college a few hundred miles away and make a speech and get back in town time for the next show.
It keeps... That's part of my business. You know, for the last 5 or 6 years, I have done between 50 and 90 colleges a year. And that's a very pleasant, remunerative, if I may say, and most gratifying second string to my bow, or third string. I do cartoons, I do a lot of things. And I like to keep my hand in everything because sooner or later they're going to catch up with me in one or the other of these things, you know, and I'm going to have the others to turn to. So while I'm on tour, we're doing now 58 cities in 155 performances over a five-month period. And occasionally we will have, because of God, nature, and Mr. Lincoln, and the Actors' Equity demand that we occasionally have a day off. In theory, we usually travel on that day. I can wangle a situation in which I will attend either a convocation in the morning at a college or sometimes in the afternoon if the situation permits, or an evening show, or what we call the cream chicken circuit. I do ladies' clubs, you see.
Uh-huh.
And then I get back a little breathless, but nonetheless clean-shaven and white-collared and sober and alert for my evening performance in another town. But this means a good deal of quick jumping.
You know, from time to time, we hear and read, Hans Conried, that the theater will be no more in the very near future or in the future. The theater is doomed. How do you feel about
that? Well, we have heard that story now for several thousand years. It is always, it's a remarkable invalid that seems to maintain itself, at least in life. There are very serious situations facing the theater, and at the same time, the other side of the coin seems to reveal what with this regional theater is bringing up. And I know, if I may call myself a provincial actor, since I play towns other than New York a good deal, year in and year out, we are taking theater and good theater, representative modern theater, to places that have not seen living actors since the old stock days. Regional theaters, I think, will afford within the next generation an opportunity for first-rate actors to spend their lives, their entire careers, in towns other than New York and make a living wage, which has, you know, been unheard of. It's, up to in my time, an actor had to live either in Southern California or New York. But now there are opportunities, I think, throughout the country. More and more, and there will be more and more.
As we mentioned earlier, you're of the legitimate theater, the screen, television, radio. And I'm wondering, do you feel that you've been recognized more because of your appearances on television than pictures or...
Well, no, I was never... The phrase has never made it. I've made over 100 motion pictures, but never in any consequence. My very active life for 20 years, Jack, was as a radio actor. Well, that puts me in the same class, I guess, as far as employment is concerned nowadays, with, as a dirigible pilot, you know, or a buggy whip raider, because there is no more craft for that. It was a very pleasant... I was with Orson Welles' Mercury Company for 7 years. I've worked with Norman Corwin and Arch Obler and Irving Reese. And there was good theater in those days. And then after the war, I became a comic stooge. And the real change for me came when my friend Jack Parr invited me. And his words were, "You have a big mouth." When I inquired, I said, "Well, what am I going to do? What sort of a show is it, Jack?" He says, "Well, we just sit and talk late at night." And I said, "That sounds sort of silly. Who'll watch?" He said, "I don't know," but he'd only been on it 2 or 3 days when he called me, "but you have a big mouth." And that changed me, Jack, from a character actor. And I suppose I had a certain amount of acceptance and respect from my fellow, at least acceptance, if not respect, since I'd been steadily employed for 20 years. But suddenly I became a television personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's now by no means synonymous with being an actor.
In Hans Conried's case, he is a good actor. Is there such a thing as being dedicated in a business, or are we all in it for as much money as we can make?
No, let's not do ourselves a disservice. Most of us have sufficient dedication of a craftsman, I think, to be straightforward, do the best job you can. Actors, no actor is ever willingly given a bad performance, never knowingly given a bad performance. We all try to be as good as we can, and we apply ourselves with a great deal of diligence. When an actor works, he works very hard indeed.
Very interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been chatting with Hans Conried, starring in the national company of Absence of a Cello. And Hans, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack, for letting me talk.
And
I always enjoy it.
This is Jack Eigen, NBC Chicago, Four Monitor.
I think that Hans ends his engagement in Chicago tonight. He is quite a fella. It would seem that when Barbara Streisand sings...
Starting here, starting now. Starting now, when we talk.
Quite an ending for a song about a beginning. You heard it, of course, on the Monitor Beacon. Now comes along somebody who says if you care about fishing, you don't have to get up early to do it. The fish will rise to the bait just as quickly at, say, 3 p.m. Tomorrow afternoon on Monitor, hear all about this good news and catch up on the other sports that interest you as well. Joe Garagiola will be on the show tomorrow, Mike Nichols and Elaine May. Jonathan Winters will, too. And I can recommend my fellow host, Barry Nelson, for some entertaining listening. So why don't you tune in?
Strong and true, 12 men fight for you. On their heads a beret of green, 12 men invincible, the A-team. Their all. They bring hope where they are seen.
12 men, invincible, the A-team. From Asia's tropical jungle rain.
Night or day, though the men of the green beret, to fan the fire of freedom's dream.
12 men, invincible, the A-team. 12 men, invincible, the A-team.
Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler's song about the green berets. This Mother's Day, give her Chanel No. 5 Eau de Cologne. She'll like it because it's not motherly. You wouldn't imagine that a glamorous movie star like Angie Dickinson would spend her leisure time, say, collecting stamps or chasing butterflies. But you wouldn't think her favorite diversion was trout fishing either, would you? I'm told that's what it is. And Monitor reporter John Cannon asked Angie about it.
Is this true, Angie?
It's true. I would go very often if it were close, but you have to take, to get to the real good spot, 4, 5, 6 hours. Really, 6 hours in California. 6 hours to go up to, Bishop or near Fresno or something. I love it.
Angie, how did this all start? Did you have brothers or were you a natural tomboy or what?
A natural tomboy, yes, but maybe because I didn't have any brothers. Maybe I wanted to be a brother. I don't know. But a long time ago, when I was still in high school, I would go out trout fishing. It's wonderful.
After you fish, do you ever add a picnic occasion to it?
Oh, well, if we get any, we fry them, and it's the greatest. It's the end. Nothing tastes better.
Well, do you always count on eating in the vicinity of where you're trout fishing?
Oh, I always take steaks with me whenever I trout fish.
You recommend this?
Oh, it's great. And you can go wading in the stream. They're not that many fish. They don't bite.
Do you know many other young ladies who are interested in trout fishing?
My closest girlfriend is June Blair. And before she got married, she married David Nelson. And David loves it. David used to go all the time with her, but before she got married to David, we went up a couple of times.
I hope you won't mind if we bring this up, but I understand at one time Lloyd's of London insured your legs for $1 million.
I don't mind you bringing it up at all. I'm very happy that they would consent. Oh, I guess they'd consent to anything you can pay the premium on. But I'm glad that somebody
did that happen to Marlene Dietrich, by the way?
I don't really know if she ever had them insured. I would think she did because they were beautiful. They are beautiful. I shouldn't say they were. They are and were. But we both have received several awards for having Nice looking lady.
Angie, your founder, in a sense, Howard Hawks, said that he was attracted to your work because you seem to enjoy it so much. And you seem to certainly enjoy life. And now, is your work still, after several years have passed, I think about 6 years ago, Howard Hawks discovered you.
Yes, I've been at it that long.
And does it still give you the same kick?
Oh, yes. Some pictures have their undesirable moments, but in general, I enjoy it very, very much. I enjoy what goes along with making pictures, you know, taking my lessons. And
What kind of lessons do you take?
I take singing and dancing lessons and French lessons, too.
Angie, tell us about your husband. I don't think all of us know who your husband is.
Bert Bacharach is his name. He's a wonderful composer. I can't rave enough about him. And it's not all love, either. He's really marvelous. He's written many, many hit songs. And he did his first score for a motion picture for What's New Pussycat. Wrote all the music for that and all the hit songs.
What's the biggest hit he's had?
It looks like What's New Pussycat's going to be the biggest...
But he had a big one
temporary hit, yes, but that's why I say temporary hit. You never know. But Wives and Lovers is the big hit. And that looks, you know, only time tells you what's a standard. We were discussing that last night with Ira Gershwin and Mrs. Gershwin when we decided 10 to 20 years tells you if a song is a standard. And I have a feeling Wives and Lovers will probably become a standard.
It is now. Do you sing his tunes for him?
No, heaven's sakes, I want to keep him. No. But people say, Bert Bacharach, I know that name. His dad is a syndicated columnist.
He writes on Men's Styles.
Yes, he writes on Men's Styles, and they both dress beautifully. And my Bert is B-U-R-T, and Bert, his dad, is B-E-R-T. And it's absolutely so confusing, it's ridiculous.
Well, Angie, I can only say that we wish we could stay with you much longer.
Oh, thank you.
It's delightful being with you. We've been here in Hollywood. Angie Dickinson is working on a picture called The Chase. And
we have to say who it's with because it's fun just to say it.
We'll go right ahead.
Marlon Brando. He's so wonderful.
Well, I hope you do many more pictures with him.
I do, too. He's really marvelous. Jane Fonda is in it, and it's going to be... Well, I hope it's going to be good.
You're most enthused about it. All right. Well, thank you very much, Angie. We've been talking here to Angie Dickinson, whose latest picture is The Chase. And this is John Cannon for Monitor from Hollywood.
Angie Dickinson, who apparently has fun saying Marlon Brando. Joe Harnell's piano and orchestra, Cast Your Fate to the Wind. Henry Morgan for Monitor, spanning the continent on NBC Radio. In Fort Wayne, Indiana, we're heard on WKJG, which serves the tri-state area of Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. I very much enjoyed being with you this evening. If you've got a little diversion from it, I hope we can make it a steady thing these Saturday nights together. I'll be here every Saturday night, and I do hope you'll join me. This is Monitor, over 10 years of service to the NBC Radio Network.